KUNM programming is supported by the law firm of Rothstein, Donatelli, Hughes, Dahlstrom, Schoenberg, and Bienvenue, with offices in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Phoenix since 1976. For information, rothsteinlaw.com.
Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Deborah Martinez, public health reporter for KUNM. Public health affects all of us, whether it's the study and treatment of disease, safe and nutritious foods, or behavioral health. Today, we'll discuss some of the bills that lawmakers have introduced or are about to during this year's legislative session. They deal specifically with public health issues, things like changes to the state's behavioral health system, regulation of e-cigarettes, funding for fresh fruits and vegetables in school lunches, and the legalization of marijuana. Joining us today are Republican Representative Don Tripp of Socorro and Paul Bandy of Aztec up in San Juan County, and Democratic Senators Tim Keller and Jerry Ortiz Ipino of Albuquerque. Welcome to everyone.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, when 15 of New Mexico's nonprofit Medicaid providers were shut down last summer as a result of an audit, the state's behavioral health system came under the spotlight. Lawmakers have introduced several bills in response to some of the issues that have been exposed during this upheaval of Medicaid mental health providers. Governor Susana Martinez's administration used an emergency exception to the state's procurement rules to contract with five behavioral health providers from Arizona. Those firms have since taken over many of the New Mexico providers who were audited. Senator Keller represents the International District in Southeast Albuquerque, and as the Senate's majority whip, he gathers votes on bills. Senator, one of the measures you've introduced would make it harder for state officials to declare an emergency and subsequently then avoid the state procurement process. Explain the reasoning behind your bill.
Sure. Well, this one, I think, is the situation that happened this summer has really exposed an unfortunate loophole in our procurement code, and it's the emergency clause. Right now, basically anything health-related in administration can say, well, because of that, we're going to skip the public competitive bid process and just hire whoever we'd like, and that's what happened with these Arizona firms. So what my bill would do would basically just close that loophole, and really it would have to be a public health emergency, you know, like a disease outbreak or something like that, which would warrant something like a no-bid contract. But so we'll change the law to close that loophole and I think make it really what it was intended to be, which is for a public health emergency as opposed to general contracting for healthcare in the state.
Mm-hmm. And do you have support for this bill in the Senate?
This bill actually has had a fair amount of support. It was endorsed by the interim committee, which Senator Ortiz Ipino chairs, and did have bipartisan support in that committee. I think, unfortunately, and this might be relevant for some other issues, to date, these bills have not received messages from the governor. So I think on issues like behavioral health and even water policy, right now the legislature's hands are pretty tied. We're unable, based on our Constitution, to really address this.
And that means
we're hoping that'll change.
Sorry. And that means the governor needs to say, okay, this bill is germane. She has to give it her stamp of approval before it can be introduced, right?
Well, that's true. And it doesn't necessarily mean she would even sign the bill or support the bill. It just means that it's worth talking about. It's important enough to talk about in this 30-day session. And that's what we really need right now from the administration.
Representative Tripp, you have constituents in the Socorro area who were probably affected by this crisis. Would this bill prevent the kinds of things we saw unfold, such as the disruptions of service to patients and the installation of out-of-state providers?
Well, and I think probably we should be very careful with that. We had a crisis where we did not have providers, and so you have to have some mechanism to where you can provide the services. You can't really just shut everything down and wait a period of time until we can go through all the procurement. So I think we did have a crisis, and it was an emergency. So I think we need to be real careful what we do.
All right. And Representative Bandy, how did the behavioral health funding freeze affect your community? And what do you think about these bills to address some of the issues that came up subsequently?
You know, I don't think it's affected our community very much. I haven't heard, I think there was a very short time where the funding was cut off and it was reinstated. I think it's important to give a little background on this. It's my understanding that there were credible allegations of fraud in some of the providers, and that the new Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, has changed the law where if there are credible allegations of fraud, then the state is required to suspend funding. And if they didn't, if the state did not do that, then we'd be on the hook for the money that we gave to the providers. And so I think that it's important that I think they were just following the law, and I think the Attorney General agreed with that.
Senator Ortiz-Pino?
Yeah, there were no interruptions up in the Farmington area because Presbyterian Medical Services, which had been providing the service there, was able to negotiate getting back in. The issue really is who determines what's a credible allegation of fraud and how extensive can you just cut off services? What the Secretary chose to do this year was essentially to end 15 largest providers all in one day, which left a huge vacuum in the state. It's been suggested, and I think Senator Papin has a bill that would clarify what do we mean by a credible allegation of fraud and who decides it, and is there an opportunity for people to know what they've been accused of, what it's alleged that they're doing before you cut off their contracts and interrupt services. So that's another measure, again, awaiting a message from the governor. I'm not sure one will be forthcoming, but it is a dilemma that we've created for ourselves. My own view is that the Attorney General could have said very clearly, I'll take a look at this and decide if the allegations are credible or not. He chose not to do that, but that was always an option. And then the state could have said, we're going to take a look at these allegations and continue services, watch you like a hawk while they continue, but we don't need to totally overturn the entire system to do this.
Okay. Well, Senator Mary Kay Papin's bill, SB 33, does what you described. And how would changing the definition for oversight of Medicaid providers, you know, change the situation in the future?
Well, it would spell out a little more clearly what their rights are, whether there is a due process, whether they have the opportunity to explain whatever it is was alleged to have gone on. None of that has happened. Many of those providers have gone out of business, not even knowing what they were accused of doing. The one agency that whose audit has been examined closely and it's been completed down in Alamogordo, it was determined by the Attorney General that no fraud had occurred. It's a little late in the day for them to find that out because they've gone out of business. But that's the kind of a dilemma that I think Senator Papin's bill would hope to avoid.
All right. Representatives Bandy or Tripp, it was Governor Susana Martinez's administration that made the move to freeze funding after they determined there were credible allegations of fraud. Does this measure that amends the definition seem appropriate to you?
Ms. Martinez, I think that the definition is included in the federal act, what credible allegations of fraud are. And it's my understanding that that's the case. So I don't know that changing the definition in New Mexico will make a lot of difference to the federal law.
And I can't tell which representative that was.
That was Bandy.
Okay, so Representative Tripp, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I think actually this whole thing went to court, and a judge looked at it and said, did the department do the right thing? Should they continue this? And the court kind of agreed with that. And so I think they were following the law. And with the new Affordable Care Act, one of the stipulations is funding should be stopped. And it went to the Attorney General, and we had testimony before the committee the other day where the Attorney General said if you get any sort of a complaint, a whistleblower, or anything like that, then it should be referred. And I think it was kind of followed. It was too bad that it all came at once. So I have issues with it all happening on one day like the senator was talking about. Yeah. But from what we've been able to gather, the law was followed. And I'm not sure that you can overturn the federal law with a state fix on it. So
I'm seeing here in the studio Senator Ortiz-Pino nodding no.
Actually, we had clarification from CMS, and the state would have been fully within its authority to say, let's hear from the providers. Before I make this decision, the secretary could have said, let's hear from you, and here's what we've found in our audit. Do you have any explanation? CMS fully permits that kind of an appeal and an opportunity to discuss it. That didn't go on.
And that's the Federal Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services.
That's right, yeah. The federal agency that oversees the program.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Deborah, too, this is Senator Keller, there's, you know, I think the legislature was concerned about some potential fraudulent activities in some of these providers. But, you know, I think what even on this call, what most of us agree on is to turn off the spigot to 80% of the behavioral health system in one day was really the wrong way to do it. And I think that really was the beginning of a botched process that the state auditor has even concluded included doctoring of some of the results. You know, it turns out there were no credible allegations of fraud. There were issues with bookkeeping and financial arrangements. But the auditor, Balderas, has shown that that report was actually changed between when it went from the contractor to HSD and then on to the Attorney General.
And HSD has said that they did all the crossing of the T's and dotting of the I's that they needed to. Well, we'd like to hear from you today as well. Do you want to see tighter controls on when Medicaid funding for nonprofit providers can be frozen? Or are you glad to see that the state is holding providers responsible for what, according to those audit findings, was more than $36 million in alleged overbillings or fraud or abuse? Call now, 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866. Or toll-free, 877-899-5866. And you can email us at callinshow@kunm.org. Or post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. We have a caller from Los Alamos. Travis is on the line with a comment. Hello, Travis. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my phone call. I would just like to say that from what I've heard on NPR throughout the months has really made me a little angry. I believe this is a manufactured crisis by the governor. And again, to cut off the spigot for so many providers all at once and then to so quickly bring in outside corporations, whatever report has been made public was highly redacted. And I just heard on the show that many companies, local companies, have already gone out of business without ever knowing what they allegedly had done wrong. So, again, I think it's a case where a crisis has been manufactured so that favors could be done for big business. And I kind of hear some of the local representatives of this state circling the wagons in support of this without ever really looking into what went on.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your comment, Travis. Senator Keller, did you want to elaborate a little more on that federal-state question?
Sure. Well, and I appreciate the caller. I think mm-hmm. there are lots of questions for this, and we are, in fact, and Senator Ortiz-Pino can add to this, that we are anticipating having hearings on this issue, actually, in the Senate Public Affairs Committee, which he chairs. So, but on this, I think the challenge is, and I was just catching up on some of the news, you know, the Attorney General is going through each one of these providers, and there's one in Alamogordo where it was found out that there were $656,000 missing in their sort of accounting reports. But there was no allegation, credible allegation of fraud. So here we have an example of really these are bookkeeping issues that need to be clamped down on, but they're not criminal issues. And I think the governor unfairly criminalized this issue. And it seemed like part of a some sort of goals beyond just dealing with the issue at hand.
Yeah, and what we heard a lot of was the outcry from the Medicaid providers who were ousted, saying we never had due process provided to us. Are these bills then going to address that particular thing, Senator Keller?
Well, they would, and I think the second component to this is our state constitution is just sorely ill-equipped to deal with the fact that our state now is heavily involved in healthcare. So back when it was written in, say, 1912, the state was involved in healthcare, and whether we like it or not, we are now. And so we've got to get the appropriate oversight and accountability bodies, just like we do in our bonding areas and other areas of state government that spend hundreds of millions of dollars. Right now, all of this is up to one person, the Secretary of HSD. There's no public input. There's no legislative oversight. And there's no expertise advising the process.
Representative Bandy, did you want to weigh in on this?
Well, I would agree with Senator Keller. I think that we do need to, the legislature does need to oversee all these issues, and the health issues are one of them. And maybe we need to develop procedures to do that, and I agree with him.
So you think his bill would do that?
I'm not familiar with the details of his bill, so mm-hmm. I can't mm-hmm. comment on that.
Okay, and Representative Tripp.
Yeah, and I think before we jump too high, we need to find out exactly what went on. We'll know that after the Attorney General completes all his audits. So far, the one he completed, they had a certain amount where it'll mean quite a few dollars back to the state from a provider and billing errors or whatever. They were overcharges. It'll be refunded to the state. But I think we really need to see the process, the audit, and see what spurred the administration on to actually take that action. We're not privy to the audit to see what actually took place.
All right. Thank you, Representative Tripp. We're going to take a quick break. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Deborah Martinez, and we're talking about public health legislation under review at the New Mexico State Legislature. We're joined today by Republican Representatives Don Tripp of Socorro and Paul Bandy of Aztec, and Democratic Senators Tim Keller and Jerry Ortiz-Pino of Albuquerque. A little later in the show, we'll be talking about efforts to ban e-cigarette sales to minors. And we'll be right back.
This week on This American Life, where we live, it's cold. It's really, really cold. Maybe that's true for you, too. And so we head for the beach.
Look at this. This is January. It's like 80.
With David Sedaris.
I used to think the ideal name for a beach house was the Ship Shape. Now, though, I had a better idea. We're going to call it the C-Section.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop.
Listen for MLK, three landmark speeches, speech highlights, and commentary.
In his great speeches, he gives us a glimpse of that future that he will never live to see.
How long, not long.
That's MLK, three landmark speeches, a Peace Talks radio special.
Friday morning at 8 on 89.9 KUNM.
And welcome back. I'm Deborah Martinez with the KUNM Call-In Show today. You can call in your comments or questions at 277-5866 in Albuquerque, 277-5866, or toll-free 877-899-5866. And you can email callinshow at kunm.org, post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. Well, before the break, we were talking about behavioral health and legislation affecting that issue. Senator Ortiz-Pino, you wanted to add a comment on some aspect.
Yeah, thank you, Deborah. Just real briefly, I think we can't forget that there was a company that the state had been paying many hundreds of millions of dollars to over the life of its contract.
Optum Health.
To oversee this and to make sure that these kind of overbillings or attempts at fraud or whatever was going on was prevented. And that company didn't do its job. It's now been rewarded with an extension of its contract. And it's just incredible to me that we went ahead and created that level of oversight. It didn't do its job. Now we're paying the price. The companies that it was supposed to be overseeing and making sure we're following the rules have been put out of business. And it's blithely going its way and making a great deal of money at it.
And we heard at last week's hearing where Optum Health spoke to the Legislative Finance Committee that they will be, according to their contract, getting a portion of the money that is recovered from any of those companies. Yeah. Let's take a call now from Kara in Albuquerque with a question. Good morning, Kara.
Hi. Thank you so much for this show. It's important to get all this information out. We may be asking the same, question as Senator Ortiz-Pino is just talking about, but the contractor that made the investigation and found all of these alleged fraudulent activities, I have a question about a comment that Bill O'Neill made in an editorial in the Albuquerque Journal some months ago, which was that, as I understand it, that they were to receive some benefit and some additional profit for any allegations that they found. Let's see, I don't know if that question makes sense, but I'd just be curious to hear the response to that.
Okay, Kara, we'll go to Senator Tisipino.
Thanks, Kara, for bringing that up. I think at that time we were under the impression that the same type of incentive had been built into their contract in New Mexico that they had in North Carolina when they did a review of an audit there.
And we're talking about PCG.
PCG, the
Public Consulting Group.
That's right.
They did the audit. Mm-hmm.
But as it's turned out, I don't believe that was built into their New Mexico contract. There was no such bounty included in it.
However, Optum, as we just said, does get a portion of the back of the money they get back. All right. Well, let's go to another caller, Jose, in Albuquerque. You have been waiting. Thank you for calling. What is your statement? Are you there, Jose? Maybe he went to get another cup of coffee. All right. Jose, one more chance. Are you there? All right. Well, let's go next to electronic cigarettes, those smokeless devices that people can use to inhale nicotine. They emit chemical compounds that some say can be as dangerous as secondhand cigarette smoke, although the FDA hasn't handed down rules yet. Several cities around the country are considering rules, though, including Santa Fe. Representative Paul Bandy, you've sponsored a measure that would ban the sale of e-cigarettes to people under 18. Why do you think that's important to ban sales to young people? Do e-cigarettes automatically lead to smoking regular cigarettes, do you think?
Well, I think nicotine is definitely an addictive substance, and most of these e-cigarettes contain nicotine, and so I think it would be possible to be addicted to nicotine having never smoked a cigarette. So the bill that we're proposing, and it's a committee bill from the Tobacco Oversight Committee, is to just ban sales to minors, and I think that's a good idea. Our two local school districts in my area have banned e-cigarettes on campuses. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good bill.
And it's House Bill 15, for those of you interested in that specific number. Studies over the years have shown that taxing products like cigarettes or alcohol is a more effective deterrent than a ban. What do you think, Representative Bandy? That was discussed in your Tobacco Oversight Committee meeting.
It was discussed, and we decided that we would start with the ban of sale to minors and see what we got from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Keller, would you weigh in on this? Do you prefer a ban or a tax on these kinds of products, and why?
Well, I support Representative Bandy's measure on this, and we just increased cigarette taxes. I think it was 2 years ago, and what we've got to work through is, I think, understanding what the tax structure should look like for e-cigarettes, because you have the reverse problem where you would also still rather want to incent people to use e-cigarettes, adults that is, rather than cigarettes. So we have to be a little careful not to mess up that side of the incentive equation. But I think what we agree on is that it doesn't make sense for minors. And, you know, there's also an issue with mixing, using the devices for other kinds of illicit substances. And so that's another problem with minors.
Interesting. And another health issue on that is the mold or something that can accumulate inside of the device that can cause respiratory problems. The doctor who made that presentation to the Tobacco Oversight Committee did mention that. Senator Tisipino, so let's say the law gets passed, it gets signed. What kinds of enforcement efforts would we see? Would they be effective? Can you enforce a ban like this?
Well, we have a ban now on tobacco being sold to minors. And, you know, in some communities, it's very strictly enforced. In large measure, it has to do with making a few arrests and making an example of the merchants who sell to minors and making sure that they know that the penalty is stiff enough that they won't be tempted to cut corners. But there's still so many ways that a minor can get a hold of cigarettes. They'll still continue to get a hold of e-cigarettes if it's that crucial to them. Mm-hmm. My suspicion is they'll just, you know, what we have to weigh is whether this will just incentivize them to just go ahead and, if you're going to break a law either way, might as well get the real thing. And that's the dilemma.
Okay, we have an email comment from Frederick Olson. He supports a ban on sales of e-cigarettes to minors, but he is concerned that taxing them might harm the public by driving people back to regular cigarettes. That's an interesting comment. And Fred also points to a report from Drexel University that says e-cigarette vapors are not nearly as harmful as secondhand smoke. The FDA has not weighed in on that. So there are studies, but nothing conclusive yet, right? Hmm. All right. Well, we encourage you to call us and join on this in on this conversation on behavioral health and e-cigarettes, whatever you would like to talk about in regards to legislation up in the roundhouse this session. It'll be over in just about 3 weeks, so it should get pretty busy there soon. 277-5866 is the number to call, 277-5866. And if you're out of the area, try this toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. And so, Representative Tripp, during the 30-day session, the only budget-related bills are those pre-approved by the governor can be introduced. But there is another kind of bill that can be brought forth. That's a resolution to amend the state constitution. If it's passed, the resolution becomes a constitutional amendment that must be approved by voters, bypassing the scrutiny of the governor. What do you think of that kind of idea of bringing a lot of these? We've seen several now introduced, these resolutions that would become constitutional amendments. Representative Tripp?
Well, it seems like, and I agree, we have seen quite a few of them come forward. And I think basically it's an issue to try to be able to bypass the governor. The governor is not favorable on some of the issues that are being brought forward. And so I think basically it's just another way to get around the standard process we have.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Senator Ortiz Pino, you've introduced that constitutional amendment that would legalize the recreational use of marijuana. Colorado and Washington voters have legalized marijuana. Why go to the constitutional route here instead of working to get approval from lawmakers and the governor?
Well, you know, there's some arguments on each side of the of this issue, but in my view, we don't have what other states have, which are initiative and referendum, ways in which voters can bring issues directly up themselves. This, I think, is one reason that we sometimes have constitutional amendments of this type. It gives the voters a chance. It's more of an exercise in direct democracy. And on an issue like this, where public opinion is swinging pretty drastically in support of changing the way we view marijuana, it was my view that let's put it out and see if the voters in New Mexico will follow a path that those in Colorado have taken, or Washington, and put it into the Constitution. We still would have to come back in another year, next year or a subsequent year, and pass legislation that would enable it.
Mm-hmm.
So that if the voters say in November that they would like to see us go this far, then we would have to work with the governor, whoever's the governor next year. You know, so rather than being a way around the governor, it just says this is something the voters want, that we should sit down with the governor and figure out how we can make it happen. And that's what would happen next year. It wouldn't have to take effect until whenever next year's session said it would take effect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, could I weigh in on
this,
John Tripp, again? Mm-hmm. You know, I think if we're going to amend the Constitution, maybe it'd be better if we actually amend the Constitution to allow for referendum. Then you could actually bring this forward, and we could bring a lot of issues forward from the people. And so I think that's probably a more proper way to do this rather than piecemealing it and try to run legislation by a constitutional amendment.
Could I weigh in on this, too, Representative Bandy?
Certainly.
You know, I have a great deal of respect for the Constitution, and I'm very protective of it. It is supposed to be the framework that determines how the government operates. And I think any things that can be done by legislation and statute do not belong in the Constitution. I think it just clutters it up and confuses the issue.
Well, and I think all of us, this is always a great debate. This is Senator mm-hmm. Keller. And, you know, the flip side of that is that our Constitution, I think, is sorely out of date. If you look at kind of how states handle constitutional reform and things like this, New Mexico, even in the 90s, we were trying to have a constitutional convention and things like this to update it. And so I do think we are seeing a little bit of structural tension. It certainly is exasperated by the fact that we have a Democrat legislature and a Republican governor. But these issues have been under the surface for a while. And I think actually it's good that they're coming out, because at some point we need to go back and revisit a lot of issues in there. And the last thing I'd say is that in the meantime, at least the constitutional amendments they're a way to break gridlock. And, you know, at the end of the day, on some issues, I have a tax expenditure budget, for example. The legislature has passed that three times, and two different governors have vetoed it. Those are two branches that don't get along on that issue, and I think the voters should really be the deciding factor in that.
We've done some polling, incidentally, on the issue not of whether marijuana should be legal or not, but whether the voters should decide. And statewide, over 70%, and in some districts up to 80%, feel that this is something that the voters should decide. Our Constitution has many pieces in it that somebody might say, well, that's such a minor thing, such a trivial thing. Why would we have put that in there? At some point, the voters decided they wanted to see it in the Constitution, not just in a law. Laws can be changed every year, and you can go back and forth very quickly on a law. But a constitutional amendment gives you a certain level of permanence that voters have decided on other issues they wanted to see there. This would be another one.
Well, what do you think? Should marijuana, the question of legalization, be put to your vote out there? Call us at 277-5866 in Albuquerque, 277-5866, or outside, 877-899-5866. And this is certainly going to get a lot of discussion in this 30-day session, no doubt. And you have quite the high hurdles to overcome before it would ever become part of the Constitution.
Yes, it has to have a majority of all the Senate, not just those present on the day of the vote, and a majority of all the House, not just those present on the day of the vote. That's a pretty high barrier to try to overcome, but I think we can do it.
Well, if, let's say, it does, and in a few years we do have legal pot use, what kind of tax revenue do you think that legalizing marijuana would provide for our poor state?
Well, I mean, there's three ways in which I think this could be beneficial to the state financially, whatever the tax rate. Colorado has a pretty stiff rate, but even without looking at direct taxation of it, the opportunity for farmers to begin growing hemp in this state opens up a whole new economic development opportunity that we should have been taking advantage of all these years. Hemp is not the same as marijuana. Mm-hmm. And there have been much testimony about how valuable hemp is as an agricultural product in a state like ours, where it doesn't take as much water as alfalfa to grow. It has many more uses. It's a high-value crop. We really should take a look at that. And in addition, we're spending a lot of money enforcing the prohibition against marijuana through police, through courts, and through jails. All of that could be saved if we legalized it. So even before we get to taxation, we're looking at and then the other thing is the diversion of New Mexico's money going to Mexico to the drug cartels through the current arrangement. I don't know how much that is. Some people have estimated it's $100 million that New Mexicans spend on marijuana grown in Mexico illegally. And that would all then be available here in the state to stimulate this state's economy rather than go into the pockets of drug lords in Mexico. So the tax revenue is almost an incidental byproduct as far as I'm concerned. And that would depend on what the legislature next year and the governor agreed to set it at.
Mm-hmm.
In Colorado at 25%, the first week that marijuana was legalized, it generated $1.25 million for the state in tax revenue just on that one week.
And then we heard that the Justice Department was not going to prosecute banks opening up accounts for these sellers.
Apparently this week Attorney General Holder has indicated that he's working with the banking industry as it stands now, because it's illegal. Even if a state has a medical marijuana program or legalized it in some way, banks aren't allowed to deal with that. And they can't accept deposits, they can't make loans, any of that banking activity. He's working with the industry to try to figure out a way in those states where it is legal to permit banks to take it. It's a high-risk venture right now. You have to deal in cash, shoeboxes full of $20 bills, all of that stuff that really doesn't make a lot of sense.
All right. Well, you can email us and contribute to this conversation if you'd like. callinshow@kunm.org. And we have a caller. You can also call us at 277-5866. Here in Albuquerque, James is calling with a comment. Good morning, James.
Good morning. My comment's pretty quick. I believe that there is a moral imperative to legalize marijuana. The amount of money and the cruelty we do to prisoners that are arrested for drug possession, and then additionally the amount of money that flows to drug cartels because it is in a prohibited status. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for your call, James. We're going to take a quick break. This is the KUNM call-in show. I'm Deborah Martinez, and we're talking about public health-related bills introduced in the New Mexico State Legislature this session. Would you vote to legalize marijuana if it came to a vote, or perhaps get involved on the production side if it were legalized in New Mexico? Or do you see the substance as a medicine that should only be available to people with certain health conditions, as it is now? We'd like to hear from you. Call us, 277-5866, here in Albuquerque, 277-5866, or toll-free, 877-899-5866, or email callinshow@kunm.org, and we'll be right back.
Business and technology training through UNM Continuing Education advances careers. Certificate programs and individual classes provide the latest tools and information students need to succeed. Continuing education offers solutions for employees and employers in businesses of various sizes and industries. For a class catalog, call 277-0077 or visit ce.unm.edu. A message from the tax-exempt UNM Continuing Education.
On the next State of the Reunion, pieces of African-American history.
Ferris Street was a hustling, bustling mecca for black folks.
A mecca that is no more. What happened?
We don't tell that story. It's not law. We just don't tell it.
Redefining the narrative of Black History Month. That's on the next State of the Reunion.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
And welcome back to the KUNM call-in show. I'm Deborah Martinez. We've been talking about several public health-related bills in committee at the Roundhouse. Those links are posted online at kunm.org. And we're going to be talking about e-cigarettes again in just a minute. But we want to take some phone calls. Valdez is calling from Albuquerque with a comment. Good morning, Valdez.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My comment is simply that this should, I think, go to the vote for and allow the people to decide this. I'm neither pro nor against the legalization of marijuana, but I think, you know, our Constitution, the New Mexico State Constitution, is based on the people's voice, and I think that's critical in this day and age, just letting it go back to the people.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Valdez. And we go now to Noah in Albuquerque. What is your comment, Noah? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I think Valdez kind of hit the nail on the head. This has to go to the voters. The voters will, I think, probably say that it should be legalized because it should. I'm happy to hear you, Elaine, frame the question in terms of, you know, should it be medicinal or should it just be outright legal? That, to me, says that the conversation has gone past this question of should it even be legal for medicine. That to me, says there's progress because it's very clear that it has medicinal value. I mean, you know, not even to get into the issue of outright legalization, it clearly has medicinal value. And so that just shows that there's progress in the, you know, in the public dialogue about this.
All right. Thank you, Noah, for your comment. And Jamal in Albuquerque also has called. We welcome your comment. Good morning, Jamal.
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to make a quick comment just to say that I agree with the people who say that it should be legalized because it is less harmful to the community than alcohol, which is legal. And I also want to applaud and support Senator Pino's comments about it opening the door for the growing of hemp. Because something like that substance there it's absolutely vital to the environment, to protecting it, and it can be used in so many different products that would be beneficial to our world and affecting global climate change.
All right. Thank you for your comment, Jamal. We appreciate your calls and encourage you to call in the next few minutes. We just have a few left here for comments from our callers and listeners. 277-5866 is the phone number in Albuquerque. If you're out of the city, 877-899-5866. We're going to move on to another topic. Legislators are focusing on this year, having to do with children's health. And Representative Tripp, you've introduced a bill that would provide fresh produce for school meals. New Mexico has high rates of obesity and diabetes. How does this initiative respond to that issue, Representative?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. We did introduce a bill to try to provide a little more funding for fresh fruits and vegetables in the schools. Currently, the federal government's giving us about $2 million a year for an initiative of more fresh fruits and vegetables, but that's limited only to the schools that have a high percentage of free and reduced lunch. And this appropriation we're trying to get through will extend that and provide about $1.4 million to this PED to provide more fruits and vegetables. In fact, Senator Keller is a co-sponsor on this bill, and we hope to get some funding for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Representative, you mentioned the $1.4 million. Is that recurring? Would it be in every year we would see it come into the PED's coffers, or is it one time?
Well, it's kind of like all that. We'd like to make it reoccurring. If we can get even part of it reoccurring, that would help. But we're going to try to get some appropriation. There was a small amount last year, I believe $100,000. And we'd like to expand on that quite a bit this year. Mm-hmm. You know, over the last few years, the price of fruits and vegetables have gone up like 77%, where the price of sweets has reduced overall about 33%. So we're really in a dilemma. The good things are getting higher, and the bad things are getting cheaper, so.
Mm-hmm. I understand in this morning's news, the Navajo Nation it could be taking up measures to tax junk foods at a higher rate and remove the tax for foods like fruits and vegetables, healthier foods. We'll see if that comes to pass. Senator Keller, as Representative Tripp mentioned, you are co-sponsoring his bill. Is passing a law that puts fresh produce in school lunches enough to persuade kids to eat healthy? Can good habits be legislated, do you think?
Well, I think it's a great start. And even if it doesn't transcend to other meals of the day, you know, we've at least done what we can for lunch and, of course, in many cases, breakfast in our schools these days. So I think there's interestingly, too, an interesting economic development aspect to this, too. We've looked at bills in the past on kind of building a local economy, and a lot of it is tied to the best way to kickstart that is to take any kind of government food purchases, so senior centers, schools primarily, sometimes state-run hospitals, and trying to make those be local. And so the connection, of course, to be fresh most of the time, these vegetables and fruits are local. And so we also see, you know, a ripple effect that I hope this is just the beginning of, where we're really also creating an incentive for a local farming and agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Can I weigh in on that a little bit?
Of course.
Thank you. I agree with both Representative Tripp and Senator Keller. I think it's important to maintain our local agricultural economy. And matter of fact, I'm a farmer and a rancher, and mm-hmm. we raise grass-fed beef and sell it locally and sell at farmers markets and that sort of thing. And I think that's good for the state and good for the health of the citizens of the state.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for your comment. And Representative Tripp?
Let me make one more comment. Also, we were very encouraged. We heard testimony in committee from some of the participating schools and the patterns that they've seen evolving among the students, to where if they're exposed to the fresh fruits and vegetables, they build a desire for them, and they find as time goes on, they convert and do more and more healthy eating. So we think it's going to be very positive.
Yeah, I think you're right. I did a story earlier this year from the Española Farmers Market, where some of the funding that you folks provided to them up there allowed people to get vouchers if they had issues with obesity and diabetes, and spoke to a young man who a couple of years ago was about 30 pounds overweight. He was obese. And once he got into the pattern of going to the farmer's market with his mom, they all changed their habits, and now he is down to about 10 pounds overweight. So he's feeling really good, more active, more energy, he says, and that kind of thing. His mom, of course, is very pleased that he's done that, and she has made the effort, too, to change her diet. And that's often what happens and what needs to happen. The parents need to set that example, right?
That's absolutely correct. I think a lot of it's an educational issue, and what better place to introduce it than in the schools. So it... I think we're very encouraged. We hope we get wide support for this initiative.
Great. And we do have a call from Pam, I believe Pam Roy, with the Farm to Table organization that it just had a farm day yesterday at the legislature. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Deborah. Thanks so much. Yeah, we are so grateful for Representative Tripp and Senator Keller and also Senator Campos carrying the New Mexico Grown Fresh Fruits and Vegetables for School Meals bill. And just to iterate, same as you all said, was such an important initiative for kids. Our children really need to, you know, have the best and healthiest diet. We actually have more than 25 farmers selling to schools now, over 60 school districts across the state, really receiving New Mexico Grown Fresh Fruits and Vegetables, and even today a delivery. New delivery systems. We're working with the Food Depot, Kitchen Angels, and Roadrunner Food Bank, and the Food and Nutrition Services Bureau, the State Bureau, to really move this product across the state throughout the school year. So, and they're getting a delivery today from Deming's, from a certified organic producer down there with fresh greens and cucumbers. So we're just delighted. Really hope this appropriation sticks because it really, it'll help schools be able to pay for the fresh fruits and vegetables that are required to be on kids' plates.
Mm-hmm. Not just tomato paste on pizza, right? Pam, you last year got 1/10 of what you had asked for, and this year again, Representative Tripp is asking for $1.4 million. Is the time right, do you think, for this kind of appropriation, whereas last year maybe it wasn't?
It's absolutely the time is right. I think because of also we are seeing this drought across the country, produce is going to get more expensive, not only for us as consumers in the grocery store, but also for school food service directors. And this is tied to federal legislation. They are required to put fruits and vegetables on plates, but they don't have a very high reimbursement. It's only 6 cents, and we know that you know, fresh fruits and vegetables cost more than that. So we really need the investment by the state, and we have a lot of momentum and some great partners, and just really appreciate our senators and representatives supporting this.
Yeah, we are. We are at the bottom of lists for child hunger, child poverty. So perhaps the legislature is going to make a big step forward in supporting this kind of initiative. Is your bill, Senator Keller and Representative Tripp, is it does it have the stamp of the governor already?
We don't have an official stamp from the governor. It is a committee bill. It cleared the House and Ag Committee, and now it's in appropriation. So we'll be working it. I know comments from the governor as far as healthy eating. We hear her talking about it when she visits school all the time. So we think she'd be very supportive. If we can get it in the legislation, I'm sure she would sign off on it.
All right. And we have a call from Diane Denish. I think I know that name, with a comment from Albuquerque. Good morning, Lieutenant
Governor.
Good
morning, everybody. I've enjoyed the show this morning.
Thank you.
And I just have a comment and a question about the Healthy Food Initiative, which I think is great. But there are so many of us that believe the first place to start teaching children about healthy food is through home visiting and birth to five and in the first 5 years. And so my question is, the constitutional amendment for the Land Grant Permanent Fund, which is being introduced again this year, if you as senators and representatives will be supporting the Land Grant Permanent Fund to recognize that education begins at the beginning and change how we distribute the money for the land from, or add to how we distribute money from the land grant permanent fund. And I'll hang up and listen to your answers. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Representative Tripp, how do you feel about taking money from the land grant permanent fund?
Well, I'm one of those that consider it a permanent fund. You know, we have a certain amount and it increases every year. And it's important to not take too much out to where you deplete the buying power as time goes on. So I'm waiting to see exactly what the numbers are that are going to pass the House or the Senate. But overall, I really don't support increasing that to an unsustainable level.
Can I weigh in, madam?
Certainly. Representative Bandy.
Thank you, ma'am. The Land Grant Permanent Fund is a permanent fund. The purpose of it is to produce money for different kind of activities in the state, mostly for education. And if it wasn't for the permanent fund, which I think now is about $17 billion in the return on investment in that fund, we would have a very, very, very high tax rate indeed. And so I think that we need to keep it a permanent fund. We've done the numbers on it, and if you take out money from the permanent fund, over time, of course, you reduce the amount of money that goes for the education. And I think it's about 10 years. It depends on how you run the numbers. But in 10 years' time, if we take more money from the permanent fund, there'll be less money available for education. Plus, if we're going to change the purpose of the fund, then it not only requires constitutional amendment, it requires an act of Congress, because it's part of the Enabling Act that made New Mexico a state that determines what that money can be used for.
Thank you, Representative Bandy. Senator Ortiz Pino?
Just 2 points on that, Deborah. First, the former governor, Diane Dennis, asked if Lieutenant Governor. She asked if we supported it. I would just have a hope that I can vote on that. We haven't been able to vote on it because it never has even allowed a hearing in the last couple of years. So this year we're hoping for a hearing. If it can get into the Senate, then I would have a chance to vote on it. I support it. My view is that what we're talking about here is diversifying the portfolio. We're not talking about taking money away and throwing it away. We're talking about it making a different kind of investment, an investment in our kids and in our youth. And when we invest in our youth, we will get many times the return over the years in their increased productivity and their increased earning power and their increased business development activity than we will from investing in a stock in a company in Georgia or some other place where we invest currently. It's always a debate that you have to spend money to make money, and that's what we're talking about here. By investing in our kids, we will have a much stronger permanent fund over the years.
All right. Thank you all. And I want to very quickly go to all of you for a quick yes or no on whether you think that the measures we discussed today are going to pass and go to the governor's desk or not, as in the case of the resolution. Emergency declaration, Representative Tripp.
Emergency declaration, probably it will.
All right. Senator Keller. Emergency declaration.
I might just blatantly just add, I know we're trying to do a close up and round robin, but I just want to say on the constitutional amendment for education, we have problems in our schools, and to be honest, we all try our best, and we propose small changes. This is a big change idea that would actually make a difference, and that's why we got to do it.
All right. Well, you can hear the music, folks. Very, very quickly, banning sales of e-cigarettes to minors. Representative Tripp?
Yes.
Representative Bandy?
Yes, but it's very difficult to do something in 30 days, so I hope it can be done.
Senator Ortiz Pino?
Yes.
And Senator Keller?
Yes.
And what about the pot bill, real quick? Senator Ortiz Pino?
Yes, I think it will go to the voters.
Okay, Senator Keller?
Close vote.
Representative Bandy?
I don't think it will.
Representative Tripp?
I think it'll be real close.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks to our guest senators, Tim Keller and Jerry Ortiz Pino of Albuquerque, and Representatives Don Tripp of Socorro and Paul Bandy of Aztec. And we've posted links to the information we discussed today at KUNM.org. If you missed any of our program or you'd like to share it with friends or hear any of it again, it will be posted online at KUNM.org, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM Call-In Shows. You can email comments still to callinshow@kunm.org. Find us on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or follow the newsroom on Twitter at KUNM News. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today. Andy Lyman screened your calls. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the McCune Foundation and the Kellogg Foundation. I'm your host and KUNM public health reporter, Deborah Martinez. Thank you for joining us.